Hey guys, what's going on? It's Josh, JC Alfelto for the Writer's Lens, and Happy New Year. It is officially 2018, or it has been at least for the last 4 or 5 days, and it's really cold here in the Midwest. If you're living in the Midwest of the United States, it's incredibly cold. It's been in the negatives. I'm getting a little stir crazy staying inside my house, so I've been kind of playing around with trying to pump out a lot of episodes, so just bear with me if you think I'm rambling at some point. But I got a lot of good content here, and I want to get to it pretty quick. This is episode 21, and this one's talking about worldviews and how they affect our writing and what we read, and you know, ultimately how we interpret what we read and write. So, what's a worldview? I think that's the first thing that I need to kind of cover for anyone that's listening. A worldview is technically anything that you're using to see the world with. So it's your own lens. So in the same way the writer's lens, I'm seeing things through the guise of a writer. You know, it's your lens, your perspective of how things are, perhaps in reality, and how things ought to be, or rather you wish they would be in society, and how your actions should be lining up with how you think things ought to be in society. So that's technically, you know, in a very general sense, how our worldview is. You know, mine specifically would be more of a Judeo-Christian worldview. So that's how I would establish meaning and purpose for how I view the world. It's the one that makes the most sense to me anyway. I know there are several others out there. But anyway, just to kind of give you a broad sense of what we're working with here when I'm talking worldview. A short while ago, I had done an episode on how writing can be a bit of a spiritual experience. So I kind of see this as being like a part two to that episode. And I had mentioned in that episode how there had been studies done recently about what parts of our brain are we using whenever we're writing something, whenever we're asked to create something creatively, or, you know, from a creative sense, we're asked to create something original. So what are we doing? So we're primarily pulling from our memory areas of our brain, which, again, I thought was just fascinating. The fact that we're pulling from our memory when we're asked to write something original is really something else. I mean, it may be a bit of a duh moment to a lot of people, because it's like, oh, well, of course we're walking around like unconscious sponges, just taking in information and we don't even realize it, but then we're spitting it back out. So the question then becomes, are there some people that are more talented at this? Are there people that are not as talented, or they don't care? And is there a third part of this where there's kind of like this, maybe this almost divine inspiration that comes over us from time to time, that's neither conscious or unconscious, but something that converges inside of us and gives us what we're looking for because we're asking for it to give it to us, which is probably a whole nother episode that I could touch on, but just some kind of food for thought there from that episode. But case in point, in terms of the whole spiritual experience and how our worldviews affect what we write. When I did The Road to Mars, which I reference quite a bit on this podcast as I'm writing this series of books, I did it for a couple of reasons. Obviously, the number one reason that I wrote it was because it was fun. I wanted to do it. I'm passionate about writing, if you haven't figured it out by now. I love writing books. I love writing stories. It was a fun experience for me. Arduous at times, but fun. But the second reason why that I've discovered in just kind of my own reflection is that I was exploring various pieces of my own belief system. And like I said, this goes back to the idea of writing being a very spiritual experience. There was a guy, you may have heard of him, named Sigmund Freud, who contributed this concept and idea to the world of psychology, where he said that our personalities are made up of three pieces: the id, the ego, and the superego. And just a brief overlay of what that is. The id is like your instinctual self. It's your natural urges. That's the id. It can also be kind of seen as your very childish, immature parts of you. The ego would be your conscious self, the rational part of you that grows up trying to interpret your world. It's been modified by the direct influence of the external. And your superego then is kind of like your ideal self. It's the person that you want to be. It's the image of perfection. It's the what you're striving towards in life. That gets formulated over time. But it also can, according to what I understand, it can actually happen very early in life too, where this is kind of myself that I want to be known as. Now, this is significant because it really is talking about conscious experience and unconscious experience. And the fact that these two are pretty much at war with one another throughout the entire course of your life. I mean, if Freud is correct in his assumptions, then we're basically constantly walking around with this tension of our conscious experiences and what's happening in the unconscious. So this is why certain viewpoints can sometimes change over time as you're rationally trying to understand what is happening in your world. And that formulates this worldview. It formulates the way that you're interpreting your world. So knowing that there's this conscious and this unconscious part of us that is fighting with each other and trying to gain dominance, I would say, you know, in terms of the way you want to perceive the world, you end up coming to this kind of convergence point where the two of them are meeting when you're writing. And I found that to be my experience. Now, I don't journal a lot. I feel like I should. And I always hearken back to this interview that I did with a friend of mine, Brent McLaughlin, who's a great example of someone that journals quite a bit. I mean, he's been journaling, I think, for the last 5-6 years nonstop. And he told me in the interview, he said, you know, our memories just aren't perfect, Josh. And that's really stuck with me ever since I had interviewed him on just the topic of journaling and what it meant to him. And I thought that was a really good example of how much we need to come back to those moments where we might have forgotten something. And our journals can kind of take us back and remind us of what is going on in our conscious lives, because that's always changing. You know, we're always taking things in, we're absorbing things, we're trying to filter other things out. And we don't know what our unconscious is taking in and what it's not taking in, or perhaps it has its own agenda. So by journaling, you're kind of forcing yourself to remember what happened in the moment and what you want to remember for later. And like I said, this tends to be a bit of a spiritual thing because you're wrestling with it. You're wrestling with whatever it is that you've experienced. So like I said, it ends up becoming this expression that tends to shape your worldview. And when I was writing The Road to Mars, which is my third point here, the third reason why I was really doing it was because I wanted to explore my own worldview. Like I said, I wanted to explore my own belief system and what I believe, but I wanted to share that with other people and see what they thought of it. You know, what do you think of my ideas? You know, what do you think of how I'm interpreting things creatively, at least from a creative sense? You know, what do you think of me? Is essentially what I'm asking. And that's what any writer really is asking anyone. That's what any artist is asking other people. What do you think of me? Or what do you think of this that I've made? The more pertinent question is probably, what do you think of what I've made versus what do you think of me personally? Because I had also talked about this in another episode about, you know, should we separate art from the artist? And I think we should. I think there's something to be said for that once the art, whatever it is, has been made, it is its own entity now and can be interpreted and judged, you know, however you see fit. But there's still parts of that person that are inside of that art. I think that's also something to be said for it. So we do end up sort of judging the art based upon the person, how well we know them personally. You know, how well do we know this person in depth? So again, there is something to be said for that. It's also why so many writers can't handle an honest critique. Right? You know, if I'm being critiqued by somebody, I hope it's someone that I trust is giving me good advice, because otherwise you might tear my world down from underneath me and burn it to the ground if you give me really bad critique, you know, like, oh, this is terrible. Well, I guess I'll never write anything ever again. You know, thanks for that. But that was that last part that I just talked about, the fact that I wanted to see what other people would think, is really what I wanted to hone in towards the end of this discussion is, you know, how do we respond to other people's worldviews? And if it's brought to us directly, and this is part of that point, if it's brought to us directly, if someone gives us their worldview directly, we tend to experience a bit of hesitancy about it. You know, we get very defensive right away. You know, we don't immediately assume that the other person has our best interest, or we think this person is maybe perhaps acting in a condescending way. Hey, man, why don't you think like I do? Okay, this is obviously very prevalent on social media. I mean, you see this all the time. Here's something that I think is true. And someone rebuttals, they rebuttal back, and you probably descend into all kinds of petty disagreements. But if we look at a piece of art, okay, if we give someone a story to read, we say, hey, you should read this book, or you should check out this artist, or something like that. we may or may not realize that what's being handed to us is perhaps the worldview of this person. Perhaps it's the way they interpret the world. Maybe they're, what they value is being done in a very analogous way through this story, through this expression. And this is where I tend to think how ideas can shift the tide of culture. They can really change perspectives through art. And this is the real crux of the power of storytelling. I mean, I've talked about this in other episodes. I mean, a while back I mentioned how storytelling sometimes does a really good job of reinforcing cultural values and perspectives. And, you know, this would be part of that same argument, obviously. By retelling stories that have certain morals or value systems, we're reaffirming what we believe society ought to look like, not just what it is, and we're doing it through art and expression. We're doing it through stories. So all of these things are affecting our worldview, and depending upon what our worldview is, if we have a very, you know, strong stake in the ground and we say, I think this is how I find meaning in the world, then we have a very strong resistance to anything that's new. However, if you can be constantly exposed to this idea, to this storytelling, to these ideas, eventually it can get in you. I mean, I think that's just the power of social media. When we find ideas that we can be sympathetic towards, we tend to gravitate towards those. We tend to gravitate towards things that tend to, you know, I don't want to say fit our agendas, but in a way it does. But it's definitely things that hold our interest, things that we can relate to, we can sympathize with. But that's really the beauty of storytelling, is that even with a fictional story, even with a person that doesn't even exist, okay, has never existed unless they're inside the head of the person who made them, this person or this character or this setting can expose maybe a truth in a way that you've never seen before. And now you're seeing it written in a story, and now you can experience it in a way that is non-threatening because you're being entertained, and thereby can affect you in that way of maybe being influenced. And I don't say that like it's brainwashing. I don't want people to take away from this episode that, oh, you're being brainwashed because you're reading a person with a Judeo-Christian worldview. No, it's merely there to challenge you. It's merely there to not only challenge you, not just me challenging you, but you being challenged. And to see if you really do believe the things that you do, or maybe this changes your perspective on things. Maybe you had questions about certain areas of what's good and what's evil, and now you're experiencing them through the art of story. So that's kind of the overlay of what I wanted to touch on in this particular episode. I do want to unpack a few things that I had mentioned earlier in the episode about just kind of the nature of the unconscious and the conscious part of ourselves being at war and journaling and coming to a consensus about, well, if those two things are in play and they're part of us, you know, where does divine inspiration come from? But I think that's a bit of a deeper philosophical and theological discussion for another day. But anyway, guys, I really appreciate you checking in and, of course, checking out this podcast. I'm having a lot of fun doing it. I appreciate all the feedback I've been getting on it. And I'm slowly but surely closing in on some milestones here with the podcast. And I'm going to be having some interviews coming up soon, so just stay tuned for that. But again, thanks all for the support here on The Writer's Lens. This is Josh ACL Felto, and I'll catch up with you guys again soon.